Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land to Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the third day of November 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon, including what's been happening in Washington, D.C. with the Waters of the U.S. rule and a little purchase that John Deere made from Monsanto. Can you say precision agriculture? Then later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day and take a look at the agricultural energies with Harry Cooney, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. Corn was higher at the end of the day. December contract up 4 cents at $3.80 and a half. The March at 388 and three quarters, up 3.5 cents. And the May at 394 and three quarters, up 3 and three quarters. July futures 4 higher at $3.99 and a quarter. December at 405 and three quarters, up 3 and three quarters. Let's be clear about the nearby December contract. It was $3.80 and a half, up 4 cents. Soy complex, November beans up 3 quarters at 878 and a half. January at 879, up a quarter. March down a quarter at 881 and a quarter. July at 891 and a half, 3 quarters lower. And November beans at 882 and a half, finished a quarter of a cent lower. Bean meal down 90 cents at 301.30. The bean oil up 30 cents at 28.15. Wheat futures in Chicago finished the soft red 8 and a half higher in the lead option. December at 516 and a half. July of next year, the harvest month, at 523 and a half, up 6 and a half. Hard red July at 523 and a half for the harvest, up 4 and a quarter. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the December at $140.10. They were down $1.57 and a half. February at $142.57 and a half, $1.12 and a half lower. November feeder cattle also lost on the day, down $1.70 at $190.57 and a half. That for 100 pounds. January at $182.20, down $1.02 and a half. And lean hogs, December contract at $57.90, 32 and a half cents lower. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. There you can buy your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up on the 24th day of November in Normal, Illinois, an all-day event, just $30. Get your tickets now or at 800-898-1065.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Here's what some of the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil futures up $1.70 a barrel at $47.84. Ethanol futures down 2 1/10 of a cent at $1.56. Gasoline on the wholesale price, that's the RBOB, at $1.44 and 4 tenths of a cent, up 6 9 tenths of a cent for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel is 5 7 tenths of a cent higher at $1.56 and 4 tenths. And natural gas at $2.26 and 3 tenths, that's up 7 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 17,881, up 146 points. The U.S. dollar is stronger at 0.232 higher, 97.235, the last trade. And gold futures at $1,117.50 are down $18.40. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says we'll see the continuation of beautiful sunny skies for the day. A high of 64 degrees this afternoon and a south-southeast wind at around 7 miles an hour. Tonight, patchy dense fog after 10, otherwise partly cloudy, and a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow, patchy dense fog before 10 a.m., otherwise partly sunny, and a high of 71. Light south-southeast wind at about 5 to 9 miles an hour. And Wednesday evening, cloudy, a low of 57. Thursday, cloudy and 72 for the high. And we'll have south winds at 7 to 14 miles an hour. Thursday night, showers possible. A thunderstorm after 7, a low of 57. Chance of rainfall Thursday night, 80% chance on Friday as well. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour with Don Day.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. This is the third day of November 2015. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at the numbers from the CME Group in Chicago as they finished up for the afternoon. Thanks, Wayne, for being with us today. Nice little upturn in the corn market for this afternoon.
Yeah, it really was. When you stop and consider probably the big news of the day was Informa's estimates. Coming in at 170.1 on the corn average in the yield. You know, F.C. Stone had said 168 last night. Huebner's group said 168.2. So that's basically a full two bushels more, and yet we were able to post green ink today on the corn. So that was positive.
That's a big number from Informa. Do you think it's too high?
You know, I think it is, but, you know, they're looking at the very good yield out west, and I'm sitting here in corn deficit areas, so it's easier for me not to do that way.
The backyard can be far more clear than the one that's a bit more distant from you, that's for sure. Soy complex was narrowly mixed, though the numbers for it were higher, too.
They went up a little bit. We were looking for those to come up a little bit. You know, they were 47.9 from Informa. F.C. Stone was 47.5. And the Huebner Group so far, these are the ones that are out, it was 47.3. So, you know, within reason there, we've been hearing about better bean yields out west, you know, even maybe not as bad as they thought they might be in the east. So that one's probably within a half a bushel of what the government's going to say one way or the other that way. So I think even more so, though, ADM stock didn't do as well as what some were hoping for, would not come in as good. But along with the statements on that, Juan Luciano made the statement that he suspects that farmers have only sold 30% of their new crop versus usually 45% at this time. And the bean sales are like at 35% versus 60% on average for their sales of this year's crop so far. And that seemed way low on that for the beans to me, because I thought farmers had done a pretty good job of selling beans at harvest.
Yeah, this seems to be a differentiation between those elevator operators and the brokers who have been working with farmers. Last week on Commodity Week, we ran into the same thing that the Andersons yesterday when we asked them did not believe that they had purchased, at least locally in the Champaign area, as many soybeans as they normally have. And so there is some differentiation there. And if farmers aren't sold up on either of them at this point, does that cause a problem for the system somewhere along the lines? And I don't know whether that's a problem in getting grain and they'll have to run basis even more, or whether it would all dump into the system at once and create a glut in the marketplace and a downturn.
Well, I think one of the things that we do have to look at, Todd, is, you know, how long are all the farmers going to hold, and at what point will we maybe letting some crop be moved? And I think it could create something near the end of the year if their title is for too long. But the tight holding so far has really, you know, held up these basis levels. You know, as we're talking about that, I think, you know, Decatur was, 24 over for corn this morning. You know, we're 24 over here at the ethanol plants in Indiana. So that tight holding has definitely produced a lot better basis this time of year than usual.
And again, we probably ought to discuss something we did this morning, and we'll go through it one more time, which is locking in basis. Tell me how to go about doing that and what it really means for a producer.
Well, I mean, as producer, there's two things that constitute his price. We have the Board of Trade or the futures price, and generally the local elevator pays that price plus or minus whatever the basis is. And so, you know, you can set either one or both by setting a flat cash price would be just what that is and what it figures out that day. You can sell a basis contract where you're delivering the grain for a certain time period and you're paid so much over or under the board whenever you do set the price with them when you deliver or whatever that way along the way. So right now we're saying, you know, we're not real favorable about the price on the board, but we are very favorable about a 24 to 30 over basis. So maybe we just make a basis contract now and leave the pricing side open. Or we go ahead and price it now, take that money, and if we want to, we can re-own it with an option or futures on the board.
And you have had some of your clientele go ahead and lock in basis, haven't you?
Yes. We've been, especially when we were getting, we saw 30 over for a December delivery here at a couple of the ethanol plants, and we highly advised making some sales there.
All right. Anything else for the day we ought to discuss before I let you go?
Well, you know, a little bit of disappointment, I guess, with Congress. They didn't block the water of the U.S. that way. Then that's not a good thing for farmers. It means more EPA regulations that, unfortunately, we didn't get repealed.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and we will hear a little more, not much, about the waters of the U.S. rule just before 2 o'clock Central Time. The Senate did take a vote on the waters of the U.S. Rule that has already been put into place and implemented by the United States Environmental Protection Agency. That vote failed. More on that in the Ag News in just a bit. And a couple of other items. If you have not been to our website and picked up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, please do that. You can do that right now, in fact, online at willag.org or at farmassetsconference.com. You can find out all the details and the agenda lines at farmassetconference.com. Just pick up the tickets by dialing in if you want at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $30. Our thanks, of course, to the folks that are helping to sponsor this event. They include Farm Credit, as well as TIA CREF and the Farmland Investment Center here on campus upstairs in Mumford Hall from my office, as well as Syngenta, so thanks to them. That's the reason we can bring these kinds of programs to you for just $30. So if you want to get a ticket, you can do that right now at 800-898-1065. In today's agricultural news, John Deere has signed an agreement to acquire Precision Planting from Monsanto, and the company is entering into a digital ag collaboration agreement with Climate Corporation, a division of Monsanto. The deal gives farmers enhanced in-cab connections for Climate Corp's FieldView customers. In a Q&A issued on the heels of the announcement, John Deere spokesman Barry Nelson notes that it is a strategic acquisition to expand John Deere's precision agriculture business. He says the purchase also gives Deere more planting products with solutions that can be retrofitted to other brands and to earlier models of planters. Monsanto purchased Precision, by the way, for $210 million back in 2012. Later, Monsanto acquired Climate Corporation for nearly $1 billion and rolled the two divisions into one. Climate Corp has been managing the Precision Planting hardware business while at the same time developing the FieldView data-based crop management system. Today's announcement deals with both the hardware and software side, as Monsanto sells the Precision Planting side to John Deere, but gains access to the John Deere system for its FieldView product. That would include the full range of planter enhancements sold by the company, from the SpeedTube system to the VSET series of planter add-ons. Precision Planting built its business on planter row unit innovations, often to upgrade John Deere planters, but branched out well beyond that as the company grew. We'll stay with innovations in seeds, but move to a different nation. Major renovations in China's seed law began Friday to better regulate the industry, which is second only to the one in the United States. A draft amendment to the seed law was submitted to the top legislature for a second reading at the start of the bimonthly session of the Standing Committee of the 12th National People's Congress. Under the amendment, barriers will be removed for those applying for a seed production and trade license. The government hopes to stimulate innovation at the industry level so China can compete with foreign seed giants. Now let's come back home to Washington, D.C., where Congress last week passed an extension of the positive train control implementation deadline and could also include it in long-term highway funding. Michael Clements of NAFB reports.
The extension brings relief from feared rail shutdowns that would have slowed shipments of farm inputs such as fertilizer and delayed grain shipments. American Farm Bureau's Andrew Walmsley says those delays would have significantly harmed agriculture.
Congress last week passed both through the House and the Senate a short-term extension of highway policy, and included in that was an extension of the positive train control deadline. That extension was signed into law by the president, and we had a three-year extension with the possibility of an additional 2 years if the railroads show that they're making progress.
An extension of the deadline gives rail companies more time to comply with positive train control. Walmsley says that time is needed.
Without the extension of the PTC deadline, fertilizer production would have been the first impact that would have been noticeable to agriculture. If those rail cars would have been embargoed by the railroads, those fertilizer plants would be forced to shut down. There would have been dire effects to agriculture from a fertilizer standpoint.
Walmsley says further transportation support could be on the way this week in the House. A vote is expected on a long-term transportation bill.
Long-term service transportation bill, the rail component's obviously important, but there's that security and long-term policy narrative of ensuring we have transportation policies important to ag.
The Senate has already passed a similar long-term bill. Michael Clements, Washington.
And finally, this in the ag news for this day. Just before the 2 o'clock hour central time, the U.S. Senate voted on cloture as it relates to the Waters of the U.S. rule. Senators were unable to stop the rule from going into effect by a vote of 57 to 41 against. And that's a look at today's ag news. Up next, you know, farmers have been battling herbicide-resistant weeds for a while, and they're really running out of control options. University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager is here with a four-step recommendation.
Really, a good four-step plan in weed control in either corn or soybean, regardless of the varieties that are selected, would be number one, of course, plant into a weed-free seedbed. And it's easy to achieve a weed-free seedbed by either pre-plant tillage, burn down herbicides, or a combination of those two. Given the challenges of weather, given the challenges of resistant weed populations, very advisable not to plant any seed into any existing weed populations or any green vegetation without adequate control ahead of time. Number two, of course, would be to select and apply the appropriate residual herbicide. In corn or soybean, either one, select a herbicide that has the broad spectrum of control, gives you very good control of your most problematic species. Pay very close attention to label guidelines for the application rates based on your timing of application and the soil characteristics. It's always advisable to apply the label recommended rate for the spectrum of control that you're contending with. The third step would be to make very timely post-emergence applications. Base those not necessarily just on a calendar number of days after planting, or rather base those post decisions on adequate scouting. So return to the fields several days, begin maybe about 2 weeks after crop emergence, scout the fields, determine the weed size, the stage of crop growth stage and development stage, and make the decision on when to make that very timely application of the post herbicide. And then the fourth step would be simply return to the field maybe 7 to 10 days after that initial post application. Determine how well did it work. Do you see another germination event of weed species that warrant a second application, or do you see any crop response that is of particular concern? If we fail to go back and look at how well the product performed or the level of crop injury that we see soon after that application, we could have some very significant challenges later in the growing season.
That, of course, is Aaron Hager. He's a weed scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to learn more from him about the four-step process, you can simply search Google for these two words, the bulletin, two words there, and then comma, University of Illinois. The bulletin is the IPM bulletin from the crop sciences folks. And you'll see the first set of articles that come up from Aaron. Just hit weeds there, and you'll see that four-step program. It's really interesting. It's one of the last articles that was posted to the bulletin. That's the Pest Management and Crop Protection Bulletin that belongs to the crop scientist. Again, that's online. Search for bulletin and comma University of Illinois. Now, let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Harry Cooney is here. He's with GrowMark. Thanks, Harry, for being with us this afternoon. One of the things that farmers and others always are concerned about in the fall harvest period is having to purchase propane for drying needs. Not so much in the way of drying needs, I suppose, this year, and I guess that's probably reflected somewhere along the lines in the price of propane, is it? or not?
Well, that's right. Good afternoon, Todd. You're right. This fall, obviously, at first we had some drying demand, but the drying demand almost literally dried up on us as the as the corn moisture levels just came down quite a bit, and still some harvest going on in the northern and western parts of the Midwest, but obviously even in those areas it's starting to wind down, and corn fairly dry in those areas. So as the U.S. heads into late fall and early winter, now the eyes will start to turn to winter weather, and we've all heard about the potential for a real strong El Nino this year, and what will that provide? A real warm winter? Now we don't know, but we're going into winter with very adequate stocks. Some of the highest stock levels that we've had in the U.S. for propane in many years, in fact.
What does this tell us about the price of propane as we move forward?
Well, it provides some opportunities, especially for end users who want to start looking ahead to next fall, for example. These high stock levels have brought price down, and so there's some real opportunities, not just in liquid fuels, or not just in propane, but in liquid fuels also. Of course, the whole energy complex, as we all know, has rolled to the downside quite a bit here in the past year, and it's providing some opportunities in propane, but also in liquid fuels. In fact, the window of opportunity that I usually talk about is sometime between November and February to start looking at contracting for propane and liquid fuels for that next year. So we're just opening that season here now, so we're hunting for some bargains. And so the market's got away from us here a little bit in the past week on the upside. We'll be looking to on further dips to start doing some contracting recommendations. We'll be putting some of those recommendations out to our local FS member cooperatives. So talk to their energy specialists and see what programs they have, because in many cases, Todd, these prices that will be offered for this next year are at multi-year lows. There's some real bargains to be had in the energy complex.
And while we're down on the bottom end of this trading range, or should probably be, it's also part of a normal seasonal trend that appears year after year?
That's exactly right. The seasonals tend to bottom out in price a couple times a year, but one of the best times is in that Thanksgiving to Valentine's Day time period. So we're approaching that time period in here, and so it doesn't mean it always just drops, but more often than not, you'll have weakness during that period. Sometimes several bouts of weakness before it starts its rally out into spring and summer, liquids and in propane.
We'll talk with you again in another month or so.
Hey, have a great one.
You too. That is Harry Cooney. He is in Growmark, at Growmark in Bloomington, Illinois. Thanks to him for joining us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In a couple minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast. That was Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Probably just enough time at this point for you to visit our Farm Assets Conference, get a look at the agenda. We'll talk about big data and farm management and the value of farmland and water and runoff. That's kind of important after the BOTUS rule again today. And commodity prices, of course, you can do that at farmassetsconference.com. Buy your tickets there. WillAg.org as well, or 800-898-1065.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's Sandwich Day. The exact origins of the sandwich is the subject of much debate. One popular myth gives the sandwich's creation to John Montagu, 4th Earl of Sandwich. The Earl is said to have invented the sandwich in 1762 as a quick meal, as so not to interrupt his gambling sessions at London's Beef Steak Club. But the first written reference to a sandwich that same year goes to a rival club, the cocoa tree. On this day in agricultural history in 1832, Sir John Leslie died, a Scottish physicist and mathematician. He was the first to freeze water artificially. He used an air pump apparatus. In 1841, Johannes Warming was born, a Danish botanist. He was one of the founders of the science of plant ecology. Warming studied what he called environmental factors, including soil, light, temperature, and rainfall. In 1863, J.T. Alden was issued the first U.S. patent for an improved method of manufacturing dried yeast. And in 1966, ingredients were required to be listed on food packages. The Federal Fair Packaging and Labeling Act required manufacturers to list the identity of the product, the name and place of business of the manufacturer, packer, or distributor, and the net quantity of contents. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. It's the third day of November. Have you picked up your tickets yet? Hope so. For the Farm Assets Conference, do that online at willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065. Again, call 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $30. The Farm Assets Conference is the 24th day of November. That's the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Special thanks to our big sponsors. They include Farm Credit, TIA, CREF, and Syngenta. Now let's take a look at the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Yesterday was gorgeous. Today is beautiful. Can we expect more of the same throughout the rest of this week, Don?
Well, one thing is for certain is it's going to stay pretty mild across many areas of the Midwest and Corn Belt with the beautiful weather hanging on probably at least into Thursday before we do see some cooler weather and some showers move in the time frame of late Thursday and into Friday and Saturday. Some colder air going to be coming in with that, although the worst of the weather, the coldest of the cold air, will stay up in the Dakotas and areas across the northern Canadian border areas. And it really does look like most of the nation east of the Rockies, especially east of the Mississippi, in the 5 to 10-day period coming up, will enjoy temperatures that for early November won't be bad. And while there's some shower activity coming through, nothing too heavy.
And so what we'd really like to know about are the nighttime lows. We are in hopes, many producers are, that the soil temperatures at the 4-inch level will drop below 50 degrees. But that might take a little rainfall, which we've had, and some cooler temperatures at night. What can you tell us?
I think there's a real good chance of that. We are going to see some cooler air come in this weekend, nothing bone-chilling cold, but you know, we could see Saturday morning, Sunday morning, some temperatures in the 30s and even some near-freezing temperatures in some areas. So that will really work well to cool off those foreign soil temperatures.
Turn your attention to South America. The parts of Brazil had been really wet at the beginning of the growing season. That would be the southern half. But in Mato Grosso and some of the regions that produce the bulk of the soybeans, they were extraordinarily dry, not unusual for their winter time. But they do wait for that to stop and for the rains to enter that came. Where do they stand today?
Well, they're still going to get more. Southern areas of Brazil, the areas you just mentioned, have a really good chance over the next week to see frequent rain chances. Now, will it be excessive? No, but it looks to be wet, and it looks to be a little bit cool there as well. Growing areas of Argentina, especially the northern growing areas, have some decent chances of rain.
Hey, thanks, Don. Don Day, of course, is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. A whole series of meetings is coming up. The first, of course, is the Farm Assets Conference. Get your tickets right now, farmassetsconference.com, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. They're just $30. That's at the end of this month, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Should be a great day. And
We'll look forward to having you there. The FarmDoc Econ Series are in the month of December. Those are the 14th to the 18th. And tickets are now available for that. If you want to sign up, you can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. These are the conferences across the state of Illinois. I emcee them, and we travel with the Ag Economist from right here in Urbana-Champaign. The Farm Economics Series online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Get your tickets right now. I'm Todd Gleason.